For the fans by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another hour or so of Non-League Magic. A full house this week too, back after a short hiatus from the show, Miss Non-League herself and director of the National League, Caroline Barker. Good afternoon, Caroline.
It's now Mrs. Non-League.
Mrs. Actually. Non-League.
Yeah. Colin Peake and I mean, I spent that long on the phone to him that I just thought might make it official. That hasn't happened, by the way, and please don't start that rumour. Although I did see it graffitied outside. What a lovely new studio you're both in. Yes. What a lovely new tan you both have too.
Yes.
So either you've been out dirtying it up on the sidelines, as in going out, getting dirty as the owner, chairman, chief executive,
manager. I have golf to play. Hurry up.
Well, that's what I'm just trying to find out a bit more about you both. Anyway, hello.
You know plenty about us both, far too much as it is. And back alongside Miss Marker, the man in the managerial spot at Chertsey Town, Mr. Dave Anderson.
Still. Can you believe it? I might even make Christmas this year.
Really?
Yeah, maybe.
Just checking the odds. Hold on.
He's still in the job. It's not that he's still when he's in the job. He can still move.
Has he had any of those yellow and red cards this season?
No, not yet. But out of the FA Cup.
I heard they were being lenient in the first couple of games. Yeah.
I've had a few conversations with referees, but in the room, out of the room, but that's everything else is normal.
What for us? Sorry, Tim.
It's about as normal as this show ever gets. Any interesting snippets to talk about at the start of the show before we go to our first guest?
Can we not talk about Billericay Town? Can we not talk about Glenn Tamplin? Can we not?
Fine by me.
It does look like the rest of the world is, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's why? What I feel really sorry about, and not that I've got verbal diarrhea, but I do have verbal diarrhea. When we used to ground share there at Chelmsford at Billericay, the club were really helpful. The fans got right behind us. I know probably you went down there with a few clubs and they got on top of you.
Yeah,
and
but
not quite behind
that's
you.
I think that's all part of the deal. You don't expect to be red carpeted and I used to get a bit of a puster, but all in good banter. I hate that word.
What do those fans now do? Yeah. What do you do when you've got your owner stroke, manager stroke, whatever he is, doing that to your club? No doubt he's put infrastructure into that club.
Yeah.
Great. And nowhere have I seen that he's going to walk away and not make sure that all those debts are paid. However,
but also wants half a million to go with him.
What do you do?
I know, but and the other thing is that, and I'm not trying to be clever after the event, but from day one, for me, it was always about Glenn not managing the team.
Yeah.
And for him, it seems, and I haven't spoke to him unless we've interviewed him on here, it's always about him managing a team. And I think that's where the downfall is. I think if Glenn takes himself back upstairs, gets a good director of football in between him and whoever he employs as a manager, I think he wouldn't get the abuse he gets. I think the club would go from strength to strength.
Yeah, but why would you walk into that position? Mainly because you don't like directors of football. But but hypothetically speaking,
me?
Dave Anderson.
Depends how many knots there was at the end of the
check. So it's money, right?
If I was going there, oh, absolutely, it would be money up front, in cash, in a suitcase or two. No, but in all honesty, yes, I know the point you're making. All I'm saying is that we thought it would fail because of the reasons it's failing. But it's his money, and he seems as if he wants to be the manager. But then when he gets it, he can't handle what goes with it. Does he think he's the only manager who's had abuse? He wants to spend a few years of my life, you know?
He's made headlines this week. Sol Campbell and allegedly being linked to Maidstone United. I am told that is complete and utter poop and not happening. So there you go. That's me.
I think more to the point, Sol Campbell, Grand of Arsenal from Spurs.
I think more to the point that you talk about Maidstone, Jay Saunders. I wasn't on the show last week. What a job he's done there. And I don't know the ins and outs of why he's left. But it's been an incredible success. I put it up along with the likes of what Paul Doswell's done at Sutton, what Terry Brown did after me at Wimbledon. You know, it's a proper job, and I'd like to hear why it all finished. So come on, I thought you knew everything.
I'm saying nothing. Which amendment can I plead right now?
Tight lips. Well, let's see if we can move on to our first guest then. So it's international break this weekend, but also FA Cup weekend too. In come the rest of those clubs at step three to create 116 ties this weekend in the first qualifying round. Plenty to learn and understand. There is only one man we can turn to help us through it. Good afternoon at FA Cup Fact Bowl, Mr. Phil Annette.
Good afternoon, Tim.
Well, I mentioned 116 ties this weekend for that first qualifying round in the FA Cup, but with clubs still to come in, that leaves 393 clubs still in the competition. 393, I hear the audience cry. That's an odd number. Tell us why, Phil.
Yeah, that's right, because one of those 116 ties is a preliminary round tie that's still to be resolved. Charnock, Richard and Leek Town are still to play, and they're playing on Saturday as well. So that's to be added to the other 115 matches that are going on.
Now, I've been reporting on non-league football for over 25 years, and some of the names of our clubs still excite me. Last week, we reported on the FA Vars escapades at Esch winning, and this week, the FA Cup and Charnock Richard. What a name.
Yeah, it's a fantastic name. I've only been in the FA Cup a couple of seasons, and this year, they're already doing better than they did last year. So it'd be interesting to see how far they can go. It'd be a tough task up at Leek in the replay.
And another great thing about your stats, Phil, and everything you tweet about every round is finding out some of the nicknames you might not have known before. I love Chipping Sodbury Town, and they entertain Bristol Manor Farm this weekend. The Sods. Up the Sods.
Yeah, you imagine shouting that at the game, can't you? Up the Sods. I think a lot of people shout that, even if they're not at Chipping Sodbury.
It's where you Learn language that my father used to tell me that I was never allowed to repeat at home at non-league football. Another great one as well, Coggleshall Town against Berkhamsted. That sounds like a commune, the seed growers against the comrades.
Yeah, it could be a tie taking place in the deepest, darkest Russia back in the old communist days. So, yes. But no, it's Coggleshall Town, isn't it, versus Berkhamsted. So, should be quite an interesting game.
And Coggleshall, they're one of the clubs that are still in the competition from the early round.
Well, they only started in the preliminary round, but it is their debut season. But there is one other club who are in their debut campaign who did start in the extra preliminary round, and that is AFC Stoneham. So they're still going after two games. Must think that the FA Cup's an easy competition, and see how far they can go.
It's an easy competition to get some money into the coffers as a non-league club, for sure.
Well, that's what I mean. There's a lot of money on this round. It starts getting serious for some of these smaller clubs now. And there's about eight Step 6 clubs still in the competition, all of whom will be looking to try and continue earning that big money, which can really make a big difference for them come the end of the season.
And those Step 6 clubs, any that you fancy might cause a real upset and grab the headlines this weekend?
Well, you know, I identified one last time we spoke, Atherston Town, who won at Bedworth United. That was Step 6 beating Step 3, and that was an excellent win for them. And there's a couple of Step 3 versus Step 6 ties again this time around. Coville Town host Racing Club Warwick, so that should be a great win if Racing Club Warwick can overcome Colville. You've got Mickleover Sports, who are entertaining Hormond. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm not sure. And then you've got a reversal, which I think is probably the best chance of a major upset. Grimsby Borough from the Northern Counties East League Division 1 take on Stafford Rangers. So there's some ties to look out for where the upsets might well be.
Yeah, and there's some interesting ones as well. There's some proper local derbies as well. There's things that have jumped out at me, clubs that I know and are sort of local or where I've local to where I've grown up. You've got the Magpie Derby, which is a proper Dorset Derby. Wimborne Town taking on Dorchester Town. I don't know what the change colours are for Dorchester Town, but you know. It could be interesting if maybe that one should wear black and one should wear white. Maybe that would be the best way to play that one out. And another local derby on the banks of the River Thames, the Middlesex Surrey border, Egham Town against Staines Town, and again more of those nicknames, the Sarnies against the Swans.
Yeah, brilliant nickname. Good play on their name, Egham, to get Sarnies. So Egham sandwich. I'm guessing that's how it works. Yeah, that's a great derby. They don't meet very often in the FA Cup. I think it's only the second time they've ever done so. Staines on the first occasion. So Egham being at home, I'm surprised actually, to be fair, that the BBC didn't pick this one out as their game to show, because it ticks all the boxes for local derby and potential cup upset.
Yeah, you mentioned the BBC. Again, they're live streaming one game and they've gone for Maltby Main against Frickley Athletic this round. How are they been going down, Phil? Do we know any stats or any announcements from the BBC as to the number of people watching them?
I haven't heard anything directly from the BBC about it. I know some of the chatter on Twitter and other social media, they're happy with what they're doing, but there's always going to be people who are unhappy that their team hasn't been selected. So you often hear the negative voices louder than the positive ones. But I think I think it is a good thing the BBC are doing. I just hope that they, that at the end of the six rounds, that they link those games and their highlighting of those games with the first round proper when they come to show it on terrestrial TV come November.
Yeah, it's always an interesting debate, isn't it? When as a fan, there's complaints that they haven't covered your team. And it's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because obviously you want the PR as a club, but you also, if you're a fan, you want to be there, don't you? To start that FA Cup journey. So when you do play in the FA Cup third round, you can say that you've been there for every round.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the TV games that are happening in these early rounds do actually attract a bigger crowd because they are on being broadcast by the BBC. Not only that, but they tend to pick local derby games or something where there's some history between the two clubs. So, I don't think it's detrimental to attendance. 12:30 kickoff isn't ideal for everyone, but sometimes, as we know from the last round, it gives you a chance to get to a second game on the same day.
Indeed. And looking through through your fantastic list again, where people can find that on Twitter at FA Cup Fact File, stats on in every one of these games, every one of these ties. History in the making at Uckfield Town and AFC Croydon.
Very much so, yes. Neither team had even won an FA Cup game before this season. Croydon had five campaigns, and depending on whether you think Uckfield Town is an extension of the old AFC Uckfield and our Wealdham team, they've had anything between two to eight campaigns before this season. So between them, 14 FA Cup runs without a single win, and now in this one year they've had two each, and one of them will end up in the second qualifying round and with a chance maybe against the National League side.
And obviously I've picked out a few interesting facts, but is there anything else from your research that springs to mind that you think everybody should be using down the pub on a Friday night?
Well, there's a couple. I think the one that stands out for me, Kettering Town, their fans love to shout about how they scored the most goals ever in the FA Cup. But they also hold another record, which is they've faced the most different clubs in the FA Cup over their time. And they've actually faced 179 clubs before this round. And amazingly, they get another new club in the shape of Romford this time around. So even despite the fact they've played more than everyone else, they're still finding new clubs to play in the competition.
Right, that's proof that this pulling the balls out of the hat's properly random then.
Well, I mean, there's always been a lot of talk about facing the same teams over and over again. But, you know, it's very interesting on all the games that happened on Tuesday night. I think there was 24 clubs won their matches, and not one of them have ended up facing a team they've played before in the FA Cup. And of the 116 ties, I think there's only about 23 where there are matches involving clubs who've met before in the competition. So I think the FA have done a lot to spread the regionalisation. Woodbridge Town might think they've spread it too far, as they've got to go all the way down to Swindon and Supermarine. But it does mean that they end up with clubs playing unfamiliar foes. And I think that's a good thing.
It's the FA Cup. You want a day out, don't you? So what about you, Phil? What about your day out? What's on the agenda for Mr. Phil Annetts this weekend?
Well, I've been watching with interest Daventry Town. They've scored 16 goals already in two FA Cup matches. They're drawn at home against Grantham Town, so there's a chance for a cup upset. So I'm going to head up there to watch that. I think it's north of Northamptonshire, and see how they get on when they're up against the team from a high level, given that they're flying in their own division this season.
Fantastic stuff. Well, as ever, Phil, it's always great to talk to you. I learn. I've done my research before I speak to you, and I still learn when I talk to you. I don't know. The FA Cup is the greatest competition in the world. It wasn't as great until you got involved. What were they thinking about?
Well, I mean, that's nice of you to say so, but I need more people to say that, and I'm really happy to do it. I love the competition. And I love sharing the information I've got, and I love the interaction that comes across from Twitter and other social media. fantastic.
And you must look forward to the next few rounds when there's fewer teams in it, so there's probably less work for you to do, isn't it?
Well, that is for sure. And this has been a real difficult week, this, because the FA quite rightly delayed the replay so the clubs could have their Bank Holiday Monday local derbies. But it's been a pain in the backside for me to be able to get on top of everything with the replays only happening this week, and the games coming thick and fast, starting on Friday night at Batesford United. So, yeah, it's a hectic time, and I love doing it, but it is nice when the numbers dwindle.
And we love you doing it as well. Thanks again for your time, Phil.
It is then the weekend of the FA Cup first qualifying round. 116 ties with a whopping £6,000 for the winning clubs. Where to start? What about tie number one, the first one out of the hat? And Radcliffe against Stalybridge Celtic looks a corker. Joining us on the line is chairman of Radcliffe FC, Paul Hilton. Good afternoon, Phil.
Hi. You all right, Tim? Hi, Caroline.
Yeah, well, I carefully mentioned Radcliffe FC there, as I think the last time we spoke to you on the show, Paul, it was about a change of dropping that borough from the name. Has that had its desired effect?
Yeah, it has. It's taken effect this year officially. Obviously, we had about a year's transition, but it's allowed us to really kind of promote the club in a different way and try and develop our brand much, much better. And that's really gone down well. And it's ironic, really, that we've picked up a little bit of coverage since that happened. And we happened to be the live tie on the red button last round. And it gave us an opportunity to really push the badge out there and all the things that we've done. So it's gone really well.
And you mentioned that tie against Prestwich Hayes last time round, which was effectively a local derby as well. Any rivalries with Saturday's opposition, Stalybridge Celtic?
Not per se, no. We've come across paths a lot of times over in the past. Not so much in the recent past, because Stalybridge obviously were much further up the divisions. But they've come down to closer to our level, and they're one division above us now. So we only tend to see them in friendlies. So we've got a good relationship with them, all things apart. It should be good.
And what about being that tie number one? What about any omens from that? Do you take anything special from that, being the first balls out?
It's really weird. I couldn't quite believe it when it happened. Out of all those games, there's a bit of a positivity running through the club at the moment. We've obviously all the things that the changes that we've made over the last three and a half years I've been there anyway, and the new guys who came in with me are all starting to kind of take hold now and really bed in. And that being picked for that other game and then coming out first in the hat now, and five wins in five from the start of the season, John and Frank doing a great job, there's a real buzz around the club and the town a little bit at the moment. So it feels like there's something there. We'll see on Saturday, I suppose.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make you hold the chairman's hat on, because the minute you said 5-5, Dave Anderson held his hand up as if to say, I've done 5-2. But the problem is, at which point in the FA Cup do you go out? I'm not going to plead that to Mr. Anderson. But how much do you budget? And please tell me you haven't budgeted for the FA Cup. So what has this run done for you so far?
Well, it's great. It's allowed us to look at what we can do in the ground and structurally and little things like that. There's obviously with a club such as ours and many other non-league clubs will know this. There's a list of things that you want to do. There's so many different things that you need to do, and there's costs that you need to find. You know that you need to find later in the year, and you're always canvassing for sponsorship and other different things that allow you to meet those goals. Winning a game in the FA Cup goes some way to doing some of that stuff, and for us it's maybe making sure that we've got the training ground catered for, coach trips for away catered for, and if we're lucky and if we have a couple of good rounds through to the FA Cup, we might be able to get some structural stuff done in the ground. And ironically, today we were looking at different options about what things that we would like to kind of put into the next phase of our work. And if we have a good game on Saturday and it goes some way to helping us achieve those goals.
To be fair, Paul, I'm just looking at benefits that people like John Mackin and Frank Sinclair can bring. Obviously, there's plenty of them, but getting sort of attention from the media with people like that in at your club,
that will attract it in situations like this. How have they found it at the level? And there's a part one. And part two is, and I'm going to be careful how I word this because I've won my first five league games. But but realistically, you don't want to take your eye off that, I would imagine.
No. Well, so to answer your first part of the question, John and Frank are two very different people when it comes to the non-league scene. So Frank's obviously, you know, come in with a relative level of experience at this level in terms of he was manager of Colwyn Bay and Hensford Town, you know, Conference North, albeit, but certainly, you know, he understands the landscape. And John is new to role. John's first managerial role after being a coach when he finished playing in the game. Now, for me, it was a very courageous decision by John in order to bring Frank in, you know, because he knows that he needed somebody with him with the experience, and he's brought in someone as equally as high profile.
Yeah.
And that's a benefit and a curse, you know, depending on how you look at it. And depending on how, we are a scout. There's no doubt about it. You know, Frank's got relationships with teams in the league from his previous times at those other clubs. So people know Frank as an on-league manager as well. So there's a lot that goes on. Whereas, you know, but they're a really good team, and it was one of the important things that I think John needed to do, and he did it, and I think we're paying reaping the benefits from that. John has been superb. And the way he handles players and the way he works, I think he's going to go far in the game. So the benefits that come with it are way more high profile. A lot of people want to talk to us about what we're doing, and that tied in with the rebrand it's like a free PR boost for the club. So it's fantastic.
And just quickly, your aims for the season without dodging it.
No, I start every year, we want to win the league. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Now, whether that changes is down to results, you know, but I don't see how anybody at this level, with the way that the game changes so often at this level, cannot start with on 0 points and say they don't want to win the league. Now, you know, 5 games, 8 games, 10 games, your horizons may change. But certainly, when there's no points on the board, you have to aim for that at this level because it's achievable for most clubs. It's about how you prepare and how you do it. And in the last few years, I've said the same thing in pre-season. We finished third from bottom. But you've got to survive, for me, you have to have the aspiration to succeed. And right now, those aspirations are being matched by what's happening on the pitch. Yeah. Let's see what happens as we go forward.
I'm just writing down that to survive. It's one of yours, Dave.
Yeah, I think he's nicked mine. Yeah.
I'm going to have that as a tattoo. Just briefly, Paul, the FA Youth Cup, I know it didn't go well against Stockport, but again, seeing John down there and Frank down there, how much of that is coming from them and how much of it is you as a chairman saying, look, we want to see this through the club. We want to see the club united at all levels.
Yeah, it's something that I've been very, very, very adamant on from the off here. When the club itself had an academy, you know, there's a lot of these academies around where you've got lads who come to college at the club and play football, and the problem with it is that there's a bit of a gap in the middle in terms of the leap to the first team, and so what we've done is, you know, we've identified that we want to carry on developing players. We've got a good history of it, so we need to maximise that. So we've placed an under 21 side in as the development piece in between to allow that transition, and that also allows us to cast the net a little wider in terms of the local area and what players we can bring in, and in order for all of that to work, the academy manager has to be working well with the under 21 manager, and the under 21 manager has to work well with the first team manager, and we have to try and find a philosophy across the lot. It's difficult to do at this level compared to in the pro game because obviously you have to find time for everybody to spend time together. Mm. But nights like last night and the ability to be able to show those youngsters that there is an aim and there is an end game for them at the club, even if it's, you know, a few years off. And show that our management team and our under 21 management team are interested in them as individuals and as footballers it's really important. So the under 21 manager was sat in the dugout with the academy. So there was a couple of players from the 21s who were eligible. So we had a good mixture in the side, and with the fact that we had to put it together so quickly, because the education schemes only start around now, we actually feel like we did quite well last night. We're a little bit of naivety, a little bit of newness to the side, but the reality is, I think if we'd have had a few weeks training, we'd have run them a lot closer. And the club is showing what it does in development, and I think it was there for all to see.
And going back to the league, well, you mentioned your great start there already. You were one of the sort of stronger advocates for this East-West split in the EFA stick this season. Do you think that's panning out as everybody expected?
Yeah, I think one of the things we didn't know at the time was how many people get promoted from the North Division because of the rejig of the wider non-league pyramid. So that's affected the East side probably more than it has the West. But certainly I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's certainly the right thing for us as a Manchester-based club. And I think that, you know, certainly there's just a real basic element to it for me, which is that, you know, the transport links in the country are north to south, and, you know, really the West travelling up and down the M6 corridor, and the East travelling up and down the M1 corridor, it just makes sense. It's certainly, we haven't really felt the difference yet in terms of, we haven't played anybody that's new to the league just yet. In terms of the split, anyway, everyone we've played up to now would have been in this division. But certainly from our travel times, now we know that the final makeup of the league is less than it was last year. And I think that the majority, it can't please everybody, I do understand that, but the majority of people are in the same boat as us with that. So the great thing about it is that from the off, the league were very clear that this isn't set in stone. There is the possibility to revisit this in a few years if there are issues, and that's a really, really the correct approach, I think, because it allows us to see how the land lies and how it works out for people.
So, last one. When's the afternoon at the moment? Big game Saturday. What does a football chairman do now between now and that 3 p.m. kickoff?
How long have you got?
I knew you'd say that. That's why I asked.
There's a lot to do. Realistically, this week it's going to be focusing on what I would expect and I hope is going to be a bigger than normal gate. So we've got, you know, we've got a local team coming down for a nice FA Cup tie on a weekend where there's no Premier League. You know, there's a good feeling around the club. We're 5-5. You know, we're expecting, hopefully, to get an increase in gate. So that's you know, we've got to think about the logistics of that this week. And so that's really going to occupy my mind more than having to worry about the game. So
you employ people to do that. That's Jordan Frank's job to worry
exactly.
about the game.
Exactly. I'm worried about the pies.
Well, me too. But
and
that's.
Well, thanks as ever for your time, Paul. Wish you well at the weekend. And we'll catch up with you later on in the season.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to speak to you.
Take care. One of those points I was going to make about, Paul talked so eloquently there about the strengths, clearly, of the guys that he's brought in. Yeah. But the fact that they go down and watch the kids in the FA Youth Cup, the fact the chairman's there as well, all that level of engagement with the club certainly helps too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
You're not going to always get them playing the way that you want to.
No, I think you have to allow them a little bit of freedom, you know, to let the staff pick the team and play the way they want to a degree. I think footballers should be able to play more than one way anyway. At Chertsey, there's a youth team. I don't go and see them, but my staff do. I have enough on my plate with my team. But the one particular member of staff, Steve Hawkins, he can identify a young player much better than I can. So.
And you listen to that, so there's not... I'm not name-dropping because I won't tell who it was, but I was speaking to someone who works with a high-profile championship club and says, the problem we've got at the moment is all our kids, youth, are all playing the way they want to individually, and they're kind of being dictated to by the manager of the first team, saying, no,
this is the way I want you to play. And so they've got players that are leaving the club because the manager wants to play one system. They don't operate well within that system, and so are having to go elsewhere, and they're losing sort of rough diamonds.
I think when they come into your first team squad, then they've got to play the way you want them to play, but you've got to allow players to learn different systems.
Yeah.
What are they capable of within them systems? And to be fair, as a first team manager, I've played every system I think there is to play. Not very successful.
How did that work out for you?
Not always very successful.
Let's play the pie and pint system.
But you have to do it. So if I'm going to change my system, I want people who have at least tried it now and again. I think the other thing is that when you bring young players in, I mean, I've two of the last year's youth team are in my squad now and have played in the team. But we just take the pressure off.
Was that necessity or was that genuinely?
No, they were genuinely.
I mean, it's difficult now to say that, isn't it?
Yeah. No, they were genuinely. They've done really well in pre-season. It was necessity that one of them started Saturday because of a few out. But they've been on the bench and they've got match time. And that's because they're good enough. But I think the big thing when you do that with them is put responsibility onto your senior players. Mm. All I ever say to young players is enjoy yourself. Try and be in the right shape when they've got it. But if you're not, someone will tell you because they're experienced. But I do think it's a really difficult link to get right because supporters expect you to bring through five or six every year, and you're never going to do that. You maybe do if you do one a year, you've done great.
Paul mentioned the fact that it's international break this weekend. Do watch out for the late kickoff in the National League at Ebbsfleet. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that something might be announced about non-league day, 13th of October. During that period too. So clearly blank weekend for the Premier League and the Championship this weekend, but there'll be a...
You're going to tell us as soon as the mics are off, aren't you?
No. Although look in your eyes and then I can't not tell you anything.
Some would suggest most weekends for the Premier League are blank weekends.
I wouldn't comment.
Okay, so the FA Cup is one thing, but for most, the league is the most important focus, especially for clubs like former Football League club Torquay United, who relegated into the National League South at the end of last season, had a difficult few seasons behind them. We often talk about managers losing their jobs too early in the season, so how about a manager who's under pressure in the job, working tirelessly about building a competitive side and also winning the hearts of the fans? Step forward, Gary Owers, manager at Torquay United. Good afternoon, Gary.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hiya, Gary. I said to Tim this is a bit cruel because I wanted 3 points off your side at the start of the season at Chelmsford and you wouldn't give them to us.
No, we had a battling 0-0 draw, so it was a good result to set us up. We got off to an okay start, that draw followed by two home victories, and we thought we were up and running, and we just sort of had a sticky spell, which hopefully we've come out of now.
Well, that sticky spell, Gary, I'm sure you won't mind talking about it. People have seen the headlines over the cup of tea or coffee, whatever it was that was thrown.
It was tea.
But what people may not have seen, and I hope you're happy to talk about it, is I hear that a young fan actually came up to you, asked to see you in the dressing room. Are you happy to talk about that conversation?
Yeah,
that
no
happened?
Problem. She was, that was Saturday, actually. I mean, first of all, you know, that supporter, I don't believe, represents anything like the rest of the Torquay United fans. They're a decent bunch. They're passionate and they're loyal. They've had a tough few seasons. And, you know, when they really get behind the team, there ain't any better supporters anywhere. Mm. This young girl in particular asked to see us before the game on Saturday against Hemel Hempstead. She's called Phoebe. And when I come out my dressing room, she was sat there by herself without any parents or grandparents. She'd asked to see us and she just broke down in tears. It was, you know, it was really an unbelievable thing to see. And she just basically said, I'm so sorry what happened to you. And, you know, I'm really sorry. And, for that girl to care that much, it really meant something big. And it was a really special moment. So anyway, we went on, we won. So, you know, I sort of half dedicated that to her, and hopefully we're going to see her on Thursday afternoon when she's come to meet me and a favourite player.
Brilliant. I know, well, I don't know where I'm going to tell everyone. I think you had a few tears too, which is understandable. Is that moment to have that, as you say, the majority of Torquay fans, when you're feeling moments of pressure, to have just that little bit of a release, to have someone just to say it's all right. How much is that worth?
It was brilliant. As only a young girl, you know, it was like, it was incredible. I was sort of stood there and I was knocked back because, you know, she'd come sort of running over and we had like a, you know, she'd give us a hug and that. And I just said, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. You don't worry about it. And, you know, it was good. But I have to say, I have had loads of messages. I've had cards, I've had phone calls, emails from all over, you know, people serving out in the forces, sort of the local business community, and everyone's sort of expressed their disgust at the incident, and you know, I just want to move on from it. It was a bit of a shock, to be honest. It's not something that you expect, and while you have to take your fair share of criticism, then you know that's fine, but you know there has to be a line as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to be fair, Gary, I'm going to give you a little saying that I was taught many years ago. This will probably get cut out of the show, but I'm going to tell you it anyway. Someone said it, because we get it in management. I've had it myself. You know, I haven't had tea thrown over me, but I've been abused. And you know what it's like. It's something you have to be careful how you react to. And all your instincts, all my instincts are always to be in the front foot, but you have to be careful how you deal with it. But a guy said to me once after, he says, because it tends to be one and two people outside of hundreds and thousands in some cases. And his saying was, it doesn't matter how beautiful the rose bush is, there's always a couple of pricks.
I remember that.
So the next time it happens, so when it happens to me now, I smile because I think of that, you know, and not that it's happened at church yet, to be fair, but that's one. But on the serious side, I've put down here sort of getting things in perspective as a manager. How did you deal with that? And I don't want to sort of labour on that moment in particular, but when you hit a sticky wicket, and we all do it, and at every level of football, no one sails through a season without anything happening. How do you put perspective on them moments, and how do you go about managing your expectations of those around you, guys?
Well, I think that moment sort of might have galvanised the squad, actually, because the players come off the pitch. You know, one of the two of the players had a bit of grief, and you know, there's all sorts going on that day. And I think when we got in the dressing room, we sort of said, right, this is it. We'll remember this and let's try and stick together. And, you know, our start, if you look at our start, really, we've won 3 out of 4 at home. And 3 we've won, we've kept 3 clean sheets. And we've drawn 3 out of 4 away. And again, the 3 draws are with clean sheets. So we're not a million miles away. We've still got a bit of work to do. But, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, is the same.
It's those expectations, Gary, isn't it? It's managing those expectations of a percentage of your support.
Well, it's a league club by obviously its history. Yeah. And you know, people come to play more. The pitch is fantastic, the stadium's fantastic, and it's, you know, it's a big day out for them. And I think, you know, a lot of teams, it might be their big game this season when we turn up. We travel with large number of fans, you know, we have big numbers at home, and teams are making it tough for us. You know, everyone doesn't expect to get it their own way. I mean, look at Chesterfield and the league above, and their fans will be feeling the same. They've come down, and you know, they're having a tough run at the minute, so nothing's guaranteed.
Sorry, last one for me, just quickly. What do you find out about yourself in them moments?
Well, just that you hope that can't get any worse, for one. It was, you know, but you just think, two, that I probably need a new shirt for the next game.
Yeah.
And three, just, you know, it like I say, it makes you want to persevere and work even harder, and obviously enjoy the good times. If that's the bad time, then, you know, I know with our fans, we can have a good time if we can win some more football matches.
No, it's pretty. And to be fair, guys, that's the manager. You have to have that humour. If you take yourself too seriously, you couldn't do it. You know, we talk about managers who can't handle it. We're talking about earlier in the show. You have to have that, don't you? You can't take yourself seriously in them moments.
Well, Gary,
I had a few people ring us with sort of the old one-liners, and I think it was my cousin said, because we hadn't been scoring, he says, and you must have asked someone for a Costa, and they took you literally. But it was tea, so I had to, you know, it was tea anyway, so I couldn't think of any tea jokes.
No, brilliant, mate.
I was just going to say, it's really interesting watching, you mentioned Chesterfield, to have their sixth straight. It was Martin Allen, his interview after their defeat, 1-0 to Boreham Wood. And again, he was just, you could see him trying to find the positives from it. And it is that, he's got to try and focus on those moments. He said he saw improvement in his team, because I guess you've got to work with those players too. So you've got to show that everything's going
to
turn.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, sometimes the most difficult interview is the one directly after the game, before you've sort of taken out the bits and pieces. Gary, I don't know how you feel about it.
It is. It's hard. And sometimes I think I jump into that too quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't realise when they read your interview is that you don't often come out and say the things. People put them words in your mouth with the questions that you ask.
Yeah.
So you only answer what they want you to answer. You don't come out and sort of have your own spin on it most of the time. And like I say, I know a couple of times I probably should have stayed in the dressing room for 5 or 10 minutes longer and just gathered my thoughts. Yeah. But I tend to say what I think anyway. You know, I tend to go with my gut instinct. Exactly. You know, after Gloucester, I was completely caught off my guard. I just didn't expect it. I don't know what was going on. You know, it comes over you, you feel the heat, and like you're thinking, what happened there? So, you know, I'd sort of tried to go, and I got the other side of the barrier somehow. And 4 or 5 seconds later, I thought, what am I doing here? There was, you know, every man, his dog had all of his. So I calmed myself down, took myself away, got, some good advice from someone inside the club, and you get on with your job, and you know, that's all you can do.
Absolutely, mate.
Getting on with your job, you mentioned, you know, you've had a steady start there, mid table, 12 points from 8 already. You got Chippenham again this weekend, who are just one place below you in that embryonic division. Do you just go for the 3 points, keep your focus on every game as it comes? Is that the way that you're taking this season?
Well, we do now. We had a good home win Saturday against Hemel Hempstead. Hard fought. You know, they come and done well. Missed a few opportunities in the first half. I know a few of the players at Chippenham because I had them at Bath. People like, you know, Jack Compton and Nick McCutty. So I know that they've got danger and threats in the team. And we'll just prepare like we do. And, you know, my own thoughts are that if we can win this back-to-back home wins and then go to Hungerford and get something there, that'll set us up nicely for a game against Woking at the end of the month.
Another big game coming up. You also mentioned the pitch and how well that's playing at the moment. Obviously, you've got the ground sharing with Truro City this season. Do you think that's going to affect that maybe later on in the season?
I hope not. The chairman spent a lot of money on drainage during the summer months, and that was before the Truro deal had even been thought about. So that was as a result of the games that we had cancelled at important times, you know, last season over Christmas, and then we had a month where we didn't play at home for a month, and, you know, that sort of stops you getting any momentum. But Chris Ralph, the groundsman, is, you know, there can't be a better pitch in this league or the league above. It's a fantastic surface, and, you know, we have to try and use that to our advantage, and I'm sure that the teams that have been coming to play more have been enjoying that as well.
Well, we wish you well at the weekend, and it's been always fantastic talking to you, Gary. Always very honest.
And sorry, the only thing I'd say, thanks, Gary, because everybody wants to come on when it's rosy, and everybody ducks it when it's sticky, you know. So I really respect that you've come on and been honest, and I think people listening will have picked the bones out of what sort of guy you are, and it won't have done you any harm at all, mate.
Thanks very much. Appreciate that.
Cheers.
Thanks, Gary. Take care.
See you all later. Bye-bye.
He has that, I think he commands that level of respect anyway, from what he's done in the game and his honesty that he was saying there too. It's not easy coming down, well, you know, but into the National South, talk about Woking in there. We've already spoken about Billericay and the money. And then you have the mighty Chancellor City, which is their official title.
Yes.
But I think we had maybe half the team. They had half the team that first game of the season who were all new and in there. So you've got to buy that into it too, depending on what you've done pre-season, how late players have come in. It all takes time to gel. I know.
It all takes time.
Yeah, it does.
But nobody gets time anymore. You know, the formula's never changed.
Mm.
It's just that people cut it short. And I really, really have never got it. don't get it, and I don't think I'll ever get it. It's
would you want a your chair at the start of the season to say, well, the minute they give you the job. So Dave Anson,
yeah.
The chairman at Chertsey, says, you've got the job, Dave, at least until January the 1st. If by January the 1st we aren't mid-table or whatever the target is. So publicly come out and say, my target for you is, if by January the 1st you're not mid-table, then we will look at the situation and you could face the sack. Or
would you just think it needs to be public? I think you can have it.
But it's the outside. What makes clubs blink now is the blooming social media, is the outside pressure around it.
Listen.
Yeah, but chairman do read that.
I know, but they shouldn't.
But they do.
But they shouldn't.
But they do.
But, you know, this is the same old story. Don't read your name in print. Don't listen to your own radio show. Well, I do when you're on there, you know. But don't listen to yourself, your voice, because you get roped into all that. And it's all nonsense. And for me, managers should stay away from it. I certainly have done it all my career. And now that chairmen have become higher profile, I mean, I'm a dinosaur. I remember when nobody knew who the chairman was. Now everybody knows him as much as the management staff. Keep yourself away from it. Have the people around you trust in your board, and I was nearly said director of football there. I nearly slipped up. But have the people around you trust and deal with the situation, and don't jump at the first time someone puts a stone through your window.
Mm.
Be big, be brave, and stand by your decisions. That would be my advice. You know, it's easy it's the easiest thing. I always remember Martin Murphy, who was still a friend of mine, was chairman at Harborough, and we were talking about chairman versus manager. And I was talking to him about sacking people. And he said, listen, sacking the manager is the easy part. It's what you do next. So I would just say to chairman, be a bit braver, you know.
Mm.
Especially at Chertsey.
Christmas bonus first.
Yeah.
Note to self. I get that and I appreciate that. It takes a strong owner to do that.
Yeah.
It also takes a strong owner not to feel like they have to come out and respond to press conversations, to fans' conversations, and roll out that dreaded, oh no, I'm totally behind them. And because you're damned both ways anytime you mention
that. Well, you say that. I mean, and I know we're not talking about the Premier League. How many times you heard Roman Abramovich be interviewed?
He's having a few difficulties at the moment, so maybe not.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, as an example.
You don't. And clearly, he's been successful in that period. Yeah. It is different. Of course, it's completely different.
And yeah, I'm using it as an example.
Because you go and have a chat with them in the bar too as much. So
yes, yes.
The chairmen, the owners of these clubs are stood in the bar and they're having the face-to-face.
Well, I think that's the better one, isn't it?
Well, they're the fans too.
That's the better one. Go and speak to your supporters in the bar when they're spending money in your bar instead of on social
Buy
media.
Buy me another pint and we'll talk about it.
I've made a living out of it. Don't worry about it.
Sorry,
Tim. That's fine. Let's move on. We spoke briefly a couple of weeks about the Scottish Cup competition that is the Iron Brew Cup, with invitations for Sutton United and Boreham Wood this season. So what about this Iron Brew Cup competition? One man very much involved in it is an old friend of the show and manager at Sutton United, Paul Doswell, and he takes his side to Scotland and Edrionians this Saturday. Good afternoon, Paul.
Yeah, good afternoon, chaps.
Afternoon, Paul.
Very well, thank you.
So nearly 800 miles for this weekend. Is that the furthest you ever travelled for a game you've ever been involved in?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, if I'm being honest, I've never been to Scotland. Been to Spain and Portugal a few times and other places, but I don't think I've ever been to Scotland. So.
Whoa. I mean, we're looking for revelations on this show, but I think that's just done it.
So unbeaten in Scotland then, Mr. Doswell?
Unbeaten in Scotland currently, yeah, and Northern Ireland and Republic.
And what about this trip to Scotland? Are you doing it in style or just doing it as standard as you would any other game?
Normally what we've managed to do for Gateshead and even up to Barrow is we've sort of managed to get Virgin first class train leaving London at 10. And it does allow us to get to Barrow and the likes of Gateshead on the day. But this particular game, it's just one, you know, it's almost like 1 hour too many. So, on this occasion, the players are going from Euston on Friday afternoon. And we've also got training at Glasgow Rangers Ground, which is a nice thing for the players. And me and Baird are going to go up on Saturday morning because I've got parental duties. I've got to pick the kids up from school because my wife's away. So been flying up from Southampton, which is obviously where I live, and we arrive in Glasgow, I think, about 11 o'clock Saturday morning.
I don't know what to say. I'll tell you what, I'll take the session at Ibrox. I'll fly up and do the session at Ibrox for you, Dawes.
Yeah, I only found out, funny enough, yesterday. I mean, it's come about because we put the Glasgow Rangers Legends game on at our ground of 2 years on the trot.
Brilliant.
And it's come from the chairman of the supporters club who just rang the secretary and he said, yeah, be very happy to host Sutton. And yeah, they've given us balls, bibs and everything. So Jamie Collins is going to take the session because me and Bailey aren't there. And I'm sure it'll be good fun for him.
Oh, it's a magnificent stadium.
I have
been to Scotland, I have to say, several times.
Yeah. But listen, it doesn't surprise me.
go back to the distraction from the league, if you like, Paul. And you know, it's the obvious question, but you know, when it came up the other week on the show, I was saying it's just such a new thing that you don't see it as a distraction, do you?
No, I mean, listen, we were invited on the basis of how well this team did last year, and you know, when the chairman asked me, you know, what my view of it was, it's something new. It's not the repetitive nature of training or the same teams, and I was quite happy to say yes to it, as I think were Ball and Wood, you know, and it's typically you're very sort of yes at the time, and when it comes closer to it, you look at your interest, Dave, and the amount of games you've already played.
Yeah,
the reality is we're all looking forward to it, and you know, I've been asked lots and lots of questions about it, and it's hard to pinpoint some of the answers because people were saying, you know, what's the purpose of the competition? Why are English teams in it? And I can't give you those answers, but I know that. You know, Iron Brew take it as sponsors very seriously, and I think, you know, I think they put English teams in there to try and give the competition a little bit of a boost, even though we're not big teams.
Well, that's it, and the fact that it's not just been Scottish teams in it historically,
Northern
too.
Northern Irish teams,
of course. And I think reading some of your fans on the message board, Paul, they're embracing it, aren't they? I know they're making a couple of days of it and going. It's the old going to new grounds, isn't it? I know it will cost a bit, but there are the fans that are taking it on board.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it started off three or four saying, well, it's too much for the squad. You know, we're a small squad and all the rest of it. And I get that as well. But, you know, thankfully so far this season, we've only really suffered one or two injuries. And virtually everyone, you know, there's certainly 16 fit and raring to go up at the weekend. And we're leaving four behind that need a rest, like Ross Lafayette. He's having an injection put in his knee to help him. Cluffy needs an injection in his hamstring. Jamie Butler's played every game, has got a bit of a groin, and Dale Bennett's unfortunately got a groin. So it gives them a 10-day rest before the next league game. They'll all be fit for that, but it also gives other people a chance that maybe need a game. So, you know, we're going to play the best team we can, the strongest team we can, you know, with what I feel is right to give people rest and whatever.
Well, we're trying to keep this brief anyway for you, Paul, but I can't let you go before you know, discussing the 3G situation. I assume it's continued to work fantastically as a club, and you're bringing in income and things like that. But nothing seems to have changed from where we were last season on the rule side of things. So have you heard any more on that front, that if you were to get in those promotion spots again, you know, what your decision would have to be, whether you have to rip it up and start again?
We're in the same boat as last year. I sort of put myself out there.
Time's up.
What an answer. What an answer.
Time's up, yeah.
Well, I guess that the rules haven't really changed. So we knew what the answer was going to be, but... Yeah.
Hang on. I can feel the... Caroline, as an independent member of the National League Board. Dave, I need you to stand in front of me, do the guard dog bit, and don't let him anywhere near me. Nothing's changed, I think, is what Paul was about to say. Yeah. And
is that what you're saying? As a board member?
It's the rules when you enter the competition. And you know I'm a huge fan of 3G.
Yeah.
You know I'm a huge fan of grass. And you're in a logjam, aren't you? Until the Football League changes its mind, what are you going to do? Because otherwise it's the integrity of the competition below. So what do you do? They want promotion, and the conversations are being had between the National League and the Football League, just as the conversations continue to be had over getting three up into the Football League. So which battle do you try and fight? Where they're trying to have that conversation about both.
Yeah.
But which one do you go for?
Well, I think they're entitled to go for both, and I think it'll take a while. I think both will happen. I genuinely think both will happen because the 3G will only get better through the science of it and design of it.
It's 5G phone connection now. Did you know that?
Don't confuse me.
And how quickly
me.
Is that coming?
No, that's my point. My point is that they should have both. 3G will get better and they will have both eventually because it makes sense. But it's like all of these things, they take forever to make a decision. And who's to say they're wrong and I'm right?
I've been very impressed with those on the board at the National League, and no one pays me to say that. I have been impressed and they do listen. But on that point, if anyone at any club in the National Divisions or anywhere else, regardless within the non-league pyramid, has a question or has something they want for, my DMs, and the DMs are open, the direct messaging, not just boots. Yeah. And the direct messaging's open at non-league show, isn't it, on Twitter. I am more than happy at any stage. There's a National League board meeting next week to put anything you like before the board.
Get it in.
Not anything from you, Dave.
Oh, my God, I've started writing already.
Can all managers be guaranteed?
Okay, so as we are every week this season, we cross over now to the non-league paper to find out what they have in the pipeline for this weekend's edition. Joining us on the line this week is senior writer at the NLP, Mr. Matt Badcock. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Tim. How are you?
I've had better days, better weeks, but we live in the world of non-league, don't we? We live in the world of non-league. Now, talking about having better weeks, we did speak to Alex Neary, your editor, last week about the situation at Billericay with Harry Wheeler departing. No official statements. And then this week, they lost a tabletop as Woking, and we hear that Chairman Glenn Tamplin's putting the club up for sale. We discussed last week that actually we don't want to report it, but we almost need to, don't we? Any idea what's going on there?
Yeah, I think it's... Billericay are one of those clubs in non-league that are always going to divide opinion, and people are going to be upset that they get airtime and column inches, but they are a story. It's the latest that the club have put out that take negotiations have, I think they said stalled, but then I think they've changed that to slowed down. Make of that what you are. I mean, it's just... You can never know really what's going on with at the club. It seems to change, not even daily, but it could change hourly. And obviously, Glenn's decided that he's had enough and he wants to sell up. And whether that actually happens will definitely remain to be seen. I just, it would not surprise me if he had a change of heart, as is his, as is right. I don't think it's very easy to know what's going through his mind over it, and whether he sort of has really had enough or whether he just sort of was reacting to some quite upsetting allegations against him.
And what about the management situation? Are we any clearer on that as to who's really in charge there?
He said after Saturday, didn't he? He was asked whether Harry Wheeler would be coming back, and he said, no, unfortunately, I don't think he will be. And kind of think, well, if you didn't get rid of him in the first place, then it wouldn't be a problem. Obviously, it hasn't been officially announced, but as we understand it, that is what's happened. He obviously hasn't been in the dugout for the last couple of games, has he? And I think that's upset the fans. But there has been no official announcement. I can't see him going back. But then again, you never know. It didn't. It's only a few weeks ago that Glenn Tamplin was saying that he realised that the club were much better off with Harry as manager rather than him, as they were, as it was at times last season, and that he was going to take a step to the side and become assistant manager and psychiatrist, I think he said. And then that's all changed. I mean, I've got a lot of time for Harry Wheeler, actually. I sort of spoke to him a couple of years ago when he was at St Albans, and he came to a National Game Awards and we had a nice chat with him then. And, he's sort of earned a lot of respect for how he sort of conducted himself and what he's trying to do. He's a young coach, and I think he's got a good career ahead of him. So whether going back to Billericay would be wise or not, I don't know. But it's all these all these variables that can change, but you know, we could put the phone down and it could all be, he could be back, and who knows. So
it's like the non-league documentary we haven't had yet, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and I know sort of, you know, a lot of people, it's not to everyone's taste. I mean, you know, I went down to speak to interview Glenn this, I think this time last year, actually. And you cannot deny what he has done at the club. He has completely transformed that ground. It is, you know, so much better than it was before. Whether your tastes are murals on the side of buildings and in changing rooms, on the side of stands and in changing rooms, I don't know. But, you know, it is a completely different place. And they did last year was, you know, yes, they've paid lots of money and they had lots of players, but they still went out and won lots of games under pressure and did well. And they've obviously started the season pretty well as well. You can't deny that he's done a lot of good things. And, you know, they had, I even when I was down there, I spoke to a street pastor, and, you know, unless this guy is looking me in the eye and saying that, you know, we're trying to do good for the community, and this guy's looking me in the eye and lying, then you've got to take them at that at face value. So I think there's a lot of good things been done there, but then there's the other side. It's sort of a contradiction all the time, the whole sort of thing, really. But
well, let's celebrate the good things in non-league. FA Cup weekend, this weekend, we've already spoken to FA Cup fact file Phil Annetts about some, you know, quirky stats, facts. Radcliffe Borough, or Radcliffe as they now are, they were number one out of the hat, and we've spoken to their chairman, Paul Hilton. What about you guys? A big bumper weekend, because it's Step 3 clubs are in at this round.
Yeah, all the Step 3 clubs are now in it. I think there was a few in the last round, wasn't there? And yeah, it's sort of a bit different this year with the new leagues, which is probably going to take about 10 years to work out who comes in when and how that all works. But yeah, all the Step 3s are in now, so it's a good opportunity for them to sort of put the league aside for a week and try and get some cup glory. I think probably everyone goes into it thinking this is going to be our year and dreaming of that, those getting to that first round and all that comes with it. And obviously, as we've said before, the prize money doubling is huge this year. So winning just one game can really bring in some much needed funds to a club. But yeah, we've got bumper coverage, and I think it's nicest at this time of the year, as all these stories are about to unfold, and you think who could be the ones who go on? Where will the sort of the cup run come from? And you know, for the Step 5 clubs, they're now sort of thinking if we can get through and get a big, you know, National League North or National League South side in the upcoming rounds, and then even keep going on a bit further and get a big National League club, and that's their sort of, you know, a big thing for them. But yeah,
that's it. Like you say, with the prize money, if you go on a run, you know, clubs that are making the first round proper this year, which, you know, is everybody's sort of ultimate aim, you know, potentially meet a football league club there, but you've already pocketed a fair amount of money that would keep most non-league clubs going for the season. So you only hope that, you know, chairman now won't begin to sort of budget for a decent FA Cup run, and, you know, it makes a mockery of that they sign loads of players at the start of the season, get knocked out of the FA Cup, and everybody gets released again. That's what we hope that we don't get that cycle. Mm-hmm.
And that's often happened before, isn't it? Well, you often see clubs go out of the FA Cup and the manager gets fired, and all the players leave, and all that goes with it. You know, personally, I'd like to see some of that money ring fenced, so you can't spend it on a new striker. You've got to spend it on infrastructure or part of the ground and things like that. But I understand that there's the other side of the argument: is a club has earned that money, that's prize money, they can spend it how they want. But yeah, budgeting for cup runs is always a risky old business. I would suggest, and even though I guarantee there's still quite a few clubs who do budget for it, though.
I'm sure it has to feature in a few budgets here and there, because it's just a sizable amount. Talking of cup runs, we just spoke to Paul Dodswell as well, taking Sutton United up to Adrianians. Do you manage to get a trip up there for this weekend then, Matt?
No, well, still waiting to hear if I've got the nod, or will I be at Braintree v Wrexham? I'm not too sure. But
very similar.
Probably Braintree. But no, I think it's sort of, we said a couple of weeks ago when I was on, yeah, great, interesting to see how it goes and how the competition pans out. And it's a
good opportunity for Sutton to go. I think Dodgson said he's going to sort of use it as a little bit to give some of his players a little bit of a rest and get some minutes into some others as well, but they're still going up there and taking it very seriously. So it will be interesting to see how it sort of pans out, and you know, if Sutton or Boreham would get through, how it goes on and what sort of impact it does have on their league form, positively or negatively. But yeah, I'm not sure I've got the nod up there. What about yourself?
Well, it's the mighty Hazelheading United against Ansley Rushden and Diamonds.
Well, there you go. FA
Cup glory waiting. I'm hoping to avoid the tannoy duties, but I'm sure I'll have many other roles to perform on the day. Yeah, you're off to potentially then Braintree this weekend, but what other exciting articles can we look forward to this weekend?
Yeah, I've got lots in this week. With the sort of FA Cup, it allows us maybe sort of juggle pages around a little bit to get a little bit more other news and features in there. We've got Jeff Ling has handed us a column very kindly in his Prostate Cancer UK, obviously do great work with football and in non-league, and written us a column talking about Hartlepool. Is obviously got involved there at the end of last season when they were on death's door, and as you were saying, you know, it's the way they've started this season, the atmosphere around the club is a complete contrast to how it was last year, where they were maybe 48 hours away from not being. Jeff's always a good enjoyable read. We've got some features from lower down the pyramid as well, of FC Romania, Hashtag United, who one of my colleagues, Hugo, is writing about them, and must admit, I don't know a huge amount about them, so I think it's nice to shine a spotlight on Hashtag. I think they're one of those sort of other clubs that maybe people were a bit sceptical of, so it'd be interesting to see what they're all about. And I've also spoken to Gavin Cowan at Telford. They've had a great start. It's his first number one management job, a great start in the National League North and unbeaten in their first eight. So probably curse them and they'll lose on Saturday.
There are some great records at the moment, aren't there? It's, you know, some interesting starts to the season for different clubs. It's still so early, but if you're, you know, that far ahead or that good a start, you've got to be thinking about promotion, haven't you?
Yeah, it's one of the sort of hate this time of year where you sort of go to interview to Orient, Solihull Moors on Tuesday night, and Orient have got a great start, unbeaten and second in the league, and you can feel all the optimism around the place. But as a manager will always say, it's just a start. But Justin Edinburgh is quite, I'm not going to say, oh no, let's calm down, let's be, you know, we've got to enjoy this and enjoy these moments now, and let's keep trying to build on it and enjoy it while we're on a run, because they don't always come along like this.
Yeah.
It's starting to shape up a little bit now, and it's you know, those records are there to be broken, aren't they? But yeah. why keep going? Is it Kettering the only ones won every game in non-league as well,
yeah,
isn't it,
but
so
it,
far?
Yeah, they've got an interesting FA Cup tie at Romford this weekend.
Yeah.
One of the Sunday kickoffs, isn't it? So
On Sunday, aren't they?
That's where, you know, you can have a great run in the league and then maybe have a disappointing run in the FA Cup, and then suddenly the wheels fall off, don't they? And it, as you say, it's you're only one result away from it all going peak tong, as they say.
Yeah, Marcus Law has sort of got a history of great runs. He had a great Barwell side a few years ago, didn't he, when they... Indeed. Won the Midland Alliance and got to the semis in the FA Vars, and they sort of won tremendous amounts of games. So yeah, we'll keep an eye on how everyone's going. But so, you know, Chesterfield had a start in National League, didn't they? Won the first three and then lost the next six. So it's a stupid game, football.
Yeah,
we love it.
who get involved in this for a living, eh?
Oh, no. I could just do without all this sometimes. You're sort of addicted to it.
You love
what
it,
else would you do on a Saturday afternoon? You wouldn't be at Hayes with your Russian and Diamonds. Or you'd be miserable somewhere.
I'd probably be editing the show somewhere doing something else. But there, yeah. Well, thanks for your time as ever, Matt. Have a great weekend. We look forward to reading your report then from Braintree Wrexham and everything else that you've been writing. And we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim.
Well, that is it for this week. It's
it's been fantastic having some friends along. It's been good to have some camaraderie back within the show. So a big thank you to Caroline Barker and to Dave Anderson.
Pleasure.
Are we supposed to reciprocate that?
Yeah, you don't have to.
Can I just thank you, Dave, for needing to go and play golf and sending me out onto the M25
It's not need to hit me.
At peak rush hour. I didn't hit him.
At Colin peak rush hour. What a double-barreled name that will be. So a big thank you for everybody listening as well. Don't forget you can follow us throughout the season and join us throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Tell your friends they can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio and all good podcast aggregation sites.
Dave's just written down, I saved a penalty.
At Adrianians?
At Adrianians for Northern Ireland against Scotland.
Yeah, 1947.
Did he mention that he's actually played further afield than anybody that's ever been in this show as well?
I think he's been to Iceland in the UEFA Cup.
Okay, well, I was trying to keep that quiet.
And he's been to Iceland and got every pizza that was available.
Yeah, and then I went to Tesco's. Yeah, I know, I've got the joke. You try and say something quietly, you know.
Yeah.
You've become, you know, I used to trust
the journalist.
Loose lips and them are tight lips.
That's the other tattoo.
That will get cut.
Oh, no, it won't.
Oh, no. I've got to go. I've golf to play, but it's lovely seeing you.
Thank you and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.